There's another story that's told of while they're just wandering through the woods and enjoying themselves. And the story is told that Yudhishthira, of all the brothers, was really quite happy living in the forest. They went to where various sages lived. They spent their time, you know, in contemplation of divine things. They learned wisdom from many of the rishis who lived in the forest. And Yudhishthira's nature was much more suited to the forest life. So even though his brothers chafed under the inactivity and the constant thought of the injustice, and they loved to talk about the war and how they would win and the wrongs that had been done to them and stir up their anger, Yudhishthira just lost himself in the enjoyment of the life that they were having. And they were wandering through a certain forest at a certain time, and this fragrance of this wonderful flower came through. And Draupadi, who, you know, had a very strong will, she said, "Oh, that's such a beautiful flower." And she turned to Bhima and she said, "Can you bring that flower to me?" And he said, you know, so eager to do anything for this beautiful woman who was his wife, "Yes, of course I will." So he starts on this long trek following the perfume of this flower. And he goes here and there, and he walks for a long time, and he gets higher and higher into the mountains, and he can still sense that he's moving toward it. And then all of a sudden he comes to a place in the road, and he can't go any farther because there's this huge monkey sleeping in the road, and he can't get around the monkey. And Bhima says, "You know, excuse me, I'm on an errand. I have to go up the mountain." And the monkey sort of opens one eye and just kind of looks at him. And Bhima says, "I am the powerful Bhima. I am one of the Pandavas. You must move so that I can go." And he says, "Oh, but I'm very old and I'm very tired." He says, "I have been told to respect my elders, or else I would make myself huge like the mighty Hanuman and I would just jump over you." And the monkey says, "Hanuman, why don't you tell me something about this mighty Hanuman like that?" So then, in the middle of the Mahabharata, they tell the story of the Ramayana, which is the story of Ram and Sita and their great devotee warrior, Hanuman, who had the shape of a monkey. But he was the great devotee, and the great story of Hanuman is when, at one point, there was some question about his devotion, and he opened his chest and showed his heart, and right emblazoned on his heart is a picture of Rama and Sita. There's just a beautiful picture of the devotee face of the Hanuman monkey opening like this, and then you see his beating heart with the picture of Rama and Sita, because within his heart, that his heart was only for Rama and Sita. So Bhima tells this story, and Hanuman says, "Well, gee, that's very, very impressive." He said, "Maybe you should if you'll help me, just move my tail aside." So Bhima gets a hold of this tail, and he just pulls and pulls and pulls. Now this is Bhima, who so powerfully can uproot trees, and he can't seem to move the tail of this monkey. And finally it dawns on him that perhaps this is not an ordinary monkey. And so he falls at the feet and he says, "Whatever you are a divine being. I beg your pardon. Please move aside so that I can satisfy my wife's desire." And then the veil lifts from Bhima's mind and he realizes that in fact it is Hanuman. And Hanuman is said to be also the son of the wind god, who is also Bhima's father, you see, so they are brothers. And Hanuman tells that he had this great desire to meet Bhima and he wanted to find out who he was in himself. And so they meet and they embrace each other. And then Hanuman also blesses Bhima. He says, "I know of the plight that you are faced with, and I know how nobly you have faced the hardships that have been given you. War is inevitable, and I want to promise you, you will be victorious." And he said, "And I will lend my strength to your cause." He said, Hanuman says, "I will sit on the flag of Arjuna when he rides his chariot, when Krishna is driving him, and my presence there will help ensure your victory." So the picture is always shown of Arjuna with Krishna as his charioteer, and then there's the flag and there's a little monkey on it. And that's Hanuman. Now, the symbolism of that is that it's always the talk about the monkey mind. And that's one of the images that's always used. We try to meditate and our minds are as restless as a monkey. And the image of Arjuna having the monkey on his flag was to say that Arjuna, because of his power of self-control, had conquered the monkey mind, so that he could place him on his staff and he could stand strong. He was his servant in that way. And then there's this whole other story told about how that monkey is really Hanuman. So, great fun. Now, the story tells us, makes a very simple statement. It says, the wicked are never satisfied in their wickedness. You know, good people become content, but the wicked are never satisfied. So now, time has passed. We're skipping because this is the way we are going to do this. And the Pandavas are living their life in the forest, and they're settled in this sort of lake district somewhere not too very far away. And it's not enough that Duryodhana has the whole kingdom himself. It's not enough that he's banished these people and he knows that kings and kings that they are, and Draupadi, this fair and fine woman, is living this life of ascetics in the forest. He wants to see their suffering with his own eyes. And Dhritarashtra is very uneasy. You know, we've finally gotten rid of these people. Why go tempt them? Why go stand in front of them? Who knows what's going to happen? But Karna and Shakuni, you know, the evil supporters of Duryodhana, say, well, that's a very fine plan. He said he's over in this particular area. He said, why don't we go over there on the pretense that we want to review that area of our kingdom, and then we'll just be able to go with all our weapons and all our wealth, and we'll be able to sail out there, and we'll be able to parade all that in front of these poor, pathetic people, and we'll just humiliate them even more and weaken their determination. So Duryodhana and this whole retinue just goes out on this pretense, and he goes to camp by this lake, which is near where the Pandavas are living. But when he gets there, he finds that the area is already occupied by a Gandharva. Now, a Gandharva is a celestial being from the abode of Indra, and it's a Gandharva named Chitrasena, happens to be his name. And the first servants go out to set up the camp so that it'll be ready for Duryodhana, but Chitrasena says, I'm sorry, I'm already here. And the servants say, but the Lord King Duryodhana wants to have this place for himself. And Chitrasena says, too bad. It's my place. I already have it. I'm just not going to vacate it for you. So the servants go back to Duryodhana, and Duryodhana, being a kshatriya and being hot-tempered like he is, and the wicked are never satisfied, and he's on this negative path anyway, so he says, how dare he refuse to cooperate with me? And he gathers up an army, and he's going to go out and attack this Gandharva. But he, no matter how he fights, this Gandharva and his retinue are very strong, and even Karna, who's always bragging about his power, goes out to fight, and this Gandharva just defeats him. Karna has to run away, and Duryodhana loses his chariot, and he's helpless on the ground, and Chitrasena grabs him, ties him up, and holds him prisoner. Now the army and the rest of the servants, they just don't know what to do. Duryodhana has been taken prisoner. Karna has run off the field. What should they do? And then one of them realizes, the Pandavas, they're right over here. Maybe they can help us. Okay. So they go to Yudhishthira and the brothers, and they describe that Duryodhana is being held prisoner right now by this Gandharva. And Bhima says, essentially, well, that's really good news. You know, let him rot in the hands of that Gandharva. And Yudhishthira says, it's not right to gloat even over the misfortune of your enemies. Now, of course, these are little bits of life lessons that Yudhishthira says. It's not right, even if it's misfortune. Besides that, Yudhishthira says, we are kshatriyas. And anyone who's in distress, who appeals to us for help, it is our obligation to help them. We can't let it be said that merely because they behave dishonorably, that therefore we behave dishonorably also. He says, we must go and rescue him. So, he sent Bhima and Arjuna to rescue him. Now, when they get to there, there's this fearsome Gandharva, and the Gandharva turns out to be a friend of Arjuna's. They had met in Indra's celestial realm. And it turns out, Chitrasena explains, that your father Indra saw Duryodhana's nefarious plot, and he sent me down here to teach Duryodhana a lesson. Chitrasena says, I have no use for him. Just do whatever you want. So they bring Duryodhana all bound up. Bhima and Arjuna bring him to Yudhishthira. you know, once again. And Yudhishthira behaves magnanimously because that's his nature. He says a few words to Duryodhana about, even now, it's not too late, he says. Even now, you could give up this enmity. There's no need for you to carry this hatred. If you would change your thoughts and change your feelings toward us now, all is forgiven. And Duryodhana absolutely refuses, and Yudhishthira, of course, lets him free and lets him go back. And Duryodhana is now so humiliated that he decides that he's just going to sit down and he's going to fast until he dies. And so there's a ritual involved for fasting until you die. So Duryodhana sort of sets himself up and attires himself in the right clothes and says the proper mantras and assumes the proper position and sits down in this isolated spot, determined to fast until he dies. And Karna comes to him and tells him what a great warrior he is and what a great future they have and how he must not be so faint-hearted. And Duryodhana just speaks of a humiliation beyond endurance. You know, he was captured. He owes his life to Yudhishthira. He simply can't go on. And his other of his brothers come. And he just constantly refuses. And then Shakuni comes. And Shakuni is very crafty. And he says, well, if you really feel so badly about everything, why don't you just make peace with the Pandavas? Not because Shakuni wants to make peace with the Pandavas, but because he knows what Duryodhana says. Never! Like that. And all of a sudden, this sort of his own energy begins and begins to return. See, sometimes what happens is, just a second. What happens in our lives from a symbolic point of view is, you know, sometimes we're doing something that we know we shouldn't do, and that somehow or another we're confronted by the divine alternative to our bad actions. And that for a period of time we determine to give up our bad quality, don't we? This great feeling of repentance comes over and this great repudiation of all of these negative qualities. We're going to starve this quality to death. And at first we're very, very set on it, isn't it so? Then a little time passes, right? And it just, you know, we can't remember why we acted in such an extreme manner. And yes, perhaps we ought to be a little different, but really we ought to be moderate in it, and maybe we ought to proceed slowly. And so Duryodhana acts all this out for us, you know, this great sense of shame in front of true spirituality just gradually fades away, and then his old negative energy returns. And so it is with our own karma. It just takes us so long, doesn't it? Again and again, I remember when we were doing the Rubaiyat, there were some beautiful verses about that. There were beautiful verses about how the springtime of repentance, and then actually gradually it just kind of fades and gets frozen and we go back to our old ways, because it's just a divine truth. It's the way it works for all of us. So gradually, by the time the night is over, he's not only not willing to kill himself, but he decides that he's going to carry on a great ceremony just like Yudhishthira did. Remember, he carried on this great ceremony to show what a great king he was. So Duryodhana is determined that he's going to carry on this ceremony. So Duryodhana gathers all his power. I mean, far from being willing to give up his power, the result of his being shamed by Yudhishthira is that he's going to repudiate Yudhishthira's power even more. Thus, we go, and it's sort of a yo-yo system, don't we? We get this great sense of spiritual inspiration, and then we swing back the other way and affirm our materialism even more, and then we feel bad again, and we go back and forth until finally spirit wins. So in the middle of this great ceremony, Karna, who's so devoted to Duryodhana, says, I will take a solemn vow. I will kill Arjuna on the battlefield, and I will taste neither wine nor meat from this point forward until I have fulfilled my vow. You know, and then there's great power. Even though Karna was engaged on the wrong side of the question, nonetheless, he had this courage and this skill and this determination and this extreme loyalty that were divine qualities in themselves, and the heavens rained flowers down upon Karna because of the personal power and determination, and because of his devotion to Duryodhana. Even though Duryodhana may have not been a friend worthy of that devotion, the devotion that Karna offered was still a noble example of gratitude expressed for friendship given. So then they finally make, Duryodhana makes one more attempt to try to injure the Pandavas, and this sage, Durvasa, comes to visit Hastinapura. Now, we've seen the temperament of these sages. They're just a little dicey sometimes. They have all this power, these rishis, but they also become the Brahmin's anger flares very quickly, and they'll offer these curses, and then everything gets really tough. Well, Durvasa was known as a particularly prickly kind of guy, and he was very powerful, and he would move from place to place with his retinue, and he would demand to be served. He would want a place to stay. He would want food for himself and his people, and he would want it in the way that he wanted. And if it wasn't to his satisfaction, he was known to have used his power to be injurious to the people near him. So Duryodhana knew that the Pandavas were nearby, and he knew he sent the sage Durvasa there in the hope that in their straitened circumstances with so little to work with, that in some way they would manage to offend this great sage, and then that curse would help weaken them. In fact, he knew that he sent Durvasa there at the time when he knew that the Pandavas had already prepared their food, that they had nothing left, because the Pandavas had received this great boon, which is Draupadi had been given a never empty vessel. And she could feed all of the guests that they had, all of the rishis that were there, all of her husbands and herself. And then at the end of the day, at the end of their meal, when everyone had been fed, the vessel would go empty, and it would not restore itself until the next day for the next meal. So Duryodhana cleverly sent Durvasa there, knowing that the meal was already over and that the bowl was empty. And so to buy a little bit of time, Durvasa comes and he announced that he's there and he's hungry and that they're going to go down over to the nearby lake and they're going to take their bath, and then when they come back, they expect this meal to be prepared for them. So Draupadi looks at the empty vessel and just doesn't know what to do, because the time has passed. And Krishna is there. And Krishna comes all of a sudden. She prays to Krishna, and Krishna appears to her. And Krishna says, Draupadi starts to tell him about this great problem that he has. He says, my dear, don't speak to me now. He says, I'm so hungry. I need something to eat. And she says, Lord, there's nothing left to eat. The vessel is empty. He said, well, are you certain? Let me look at it. So he looks at it, and he sees way over in the corner, there's a single grain of rice and a little tiny bit of vegetable. And Draupadi's immediate response is that she's just humiliated that she didn't even clean it out properly. And here she's showing it to the Lord, and it has this old crusted food. And so he says, hey, let me just take that. So he pinches off this hardly visible, and he eats it like this. He says, just perfect, just what I needed. And then he just goes on his way. And Draupadi never even has a chance to tell him about the problem that she's facing. But then the sage Durvasa comes back and he says, I don't know. He said, I thought we were hungry, but now we all feel satisfied. He said, there's no need, no meal is required. And then he goes on his way. And then the story is, if the Lord is satisfied, everyone is satisfied. There's several stories, you know, Krishna in these ways where he eats and then nobody needs to eat after that. The Pandavas were also at the service of the various rishis in the forest, and adventures that they had included brave and noble deeds they did in defense of these sage-dwelling people. And so there was a rishi who came to them, because, of course, if anyone appeals to a kshatriya, he has to serve their cause. So this rishi came, and he said he had this fire-making tool, this special tool that he used for his ceremonies, but a deer had come and grabbed the tool away and was running through the forest, and he couldn't do any of his ceremonies without it, and could they please help him? So the Pandavas, all five of the brothers, went in pursuit of this deer. And they went through the forest, and they could see it, and they could see what it was carrying, and they just kept following it and following it, but they just couldn't hit it with an arrow, and they couldn't get any closer to it. And finally they became so exhausted and so hot and somewhat lost in the forest, they just didn't know what to do. And so they sat at the base of a tree and were trying to figure out what was happening. And finally Yudhisthira said, I'm so thirsty. And then he said to Sahadev, perhaps you could go and find us water. And Sahadev climbed this tall tree they were sitting under, and he said, well, there's a lake not at all far away. He said, I'll go to that lake, and I'll fetch water for you. And then the brothers were very grateful. So Sahadev goes to this lake, and he gets to the edge of the lake, and when he sees the water, he knew he was thirsty, but he becomes just overcome with this uncontrollable thirst. He can hardly bear it. And he's just about to drink from the lake, and this disembodied voice coming from not quite anywhere says, before you drink of that water, you must answer my questions. And Nakula says, I am thirsty. I am going to drink water first. Beware, do not drink the water until you answer my questions. And Nakula says, I am happy to answer. Sahadev says, I will happily answer your questions, but not until I drink. So he goes down and he fills his hands with water and he drinks the water up like that. And as soon as he swallows the water, he falls down dead. Here he is on the bank of the lake. He's dead. So meanwhile, Yudhisthira and the other four brothers are there, and time passes and time passes, and Yudhisthira says, Nakula, what could have happened to Sahadev? Perhaps you should go there to the lake and find him, and besides, we thirst. So Nakula goes, and he gets to the lake and the shore there, and he sees his brother is lying dead. And he sees the water, and he's so overcome with the thought that his brother has died, and he thinks of how his other brothers will feel. He just doesn't know what to do. But, oh, he is so thirsty. The thought of the water is just more than he can resist, and he walks over and he puts his hand in the water, and a voice speaks and says, do not drink of the water until you answer my questions. Look at your brother. He would not listen to me. Answer my questions before you drink. And Nakula says, I don't care who you are, and I will dispatch you in a moment for daring to kill my brother. But first I must drink. And he takes the water and he drinks and he dies. So then Yudhisthira sends Arjuna, the brave Arjuna. And Arjuna goes through exactly the same sequence. He's challenged, he drinks, he falls down dead. Bhima goes. Finally, only Yudhisthira is alone in the forest. And he thinks, what power could have kept my brothers? And he goes to the lake and he sees all four of his brothers lying dead. And he cannot imagine, and he recites, every time there's an opportunity in the story, they retell the story. He recites all of the brave adventures, you know, to himself, of all his brothers and all that they were able to do. But then he also sees the water and he's overcome with this desire. And he goes to the edge and he hears the voice. And the voice says, answer my questions or else you will die. And Yudhisthira alone, of all of them, has the power and the strength to say, what are your questions?